This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, July 12th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll get a preview of what's coming up in this year's Boulder's Environmental Nature Outdoor Film Festival. We'll also take a look at water rights in the Four Corners. Chris Moore has his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then herbalist Brigitte Mars gives us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update and commentary from Jim Hightower are at the bottom of the hour. Then we have live in-studio radio theater. At 9:30, Aaron Banko will be in the Denver studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still coming up, but first a look at the headlines with KGNU's Kira Zizzo.
Over 150 insurance companies and two survivors of the Marshall Fire have now filed lawsuits against Xcel Energy. They are accusing the utility company of negligence in relation to Colorado's costliest and most destructive fire. The fire investigation report found that the blaze had two ignition points, one of which was an Xcel Energy power line that arced and sent hot particles into dry grass. The insurance companies are seeking damages for the destruction of over 1,000 homes and more than $2 billion in property damage. The survivor's lawsuit claims that Xcel Energy was aware of the high fire risk on the day of the fire, but did not take necessary precautions, such as shutting off power. Xcel Energy denies its power lines played a role in starting the fire. A Colorado man has been charged with illegally landing a helicopter in Grand Teton National Park. According to park officials, rangers found the pilot and his helicopter at Moran Bay on the west shore of the Jackson Lake late last month. He was charged with two misdemeanors. Each comes with a fine of up to $5,000 or 6 months in jail. The pilot is scheduled to appear before a Jackson federal judge in August. These are not his first offenses. The pilot was also charged earlier this year for flying a plane too low in another national park in Colorado. Grand Teton National Park staff say unauthorized helicopter landings are prohibited to protect wildlife and preserve the visitor experience. Cheyenne and Arapaho tribe leaders will be attending a park naming ceremony tomorrow in Arvada. Jackie Sedley has the story.
Arvada is renaming a park located just north of the Van Bibber Creek Trail. The new name? Little Raven Park. City officials cite Arapaho history to explain the name change, as Little Raven, a southern Arapaho chief, was a key peacemaker between many of the native tribes of Colorado and the white settlers arriving in the mid-1800s. Little Raven survived the infamous Sand Creek Massacre in 1864. He also helped to secure what are now Cheyenne and Arapaho reservation lands in Oklahoma. The city of Arvada has invited tribal and cultural leaders from the Arapaho and Cheyenne tribes to the renaming ceremony, and will be hosting traditional celebration songs, along with words from the tribal leaders and city officials. For KGNU, I'm Jackie Sedley.
Governor Jared Polis, along with Colorado Parks and Wildlife and Great Outdoors Colorado, have announced the latest recipients of the Outdoor Regional Partnerships Initiative grant program. The program, established by an executive order from Governor Polis, aims to foster collaboration among stakeholders to protect Colorado's lands and waters and preserve outdoor recreational opportunities. The initiative represents a community-driven approach to ensure long-term sustainability and equitable access to the state's outdoors. By bringing together conservation and outdoor recreation interests, local government, and land managers, the program seeks to address challenges and develop strategies for balancing conservation and recreation of natural resources in Colorado. The grant cycle for the program has doubled the funding invested, totaling $3 million. This round of grants includes 16 regional partnerships across various regions of Colorado, addressing issues such as wildlife area and trail system management, camping management, funding, and climate resilience. The state attorney general's office is urging caution to those looking for cheap tickets to this summer's biggest shows. KGNU's Jack Armstrong has more.
According to a press release, Weiser's office is, quote, receiving reports of scammers attempting to take advantage of fans as they gear up for some of the biggest concerts to hit Colorado this season. The warning from Weiser's office comes days before Taylor Swift will perform at Denver's Empower Field as part of the Billion Dollar Eras Tour. The Better Business Bureau has received dozens of complaints in Taylor Swift-related fraudulent ticket sales nationwide. Weiser's office is alerting Coloradans to know who they're buying a resale ticket from, what the actual price of a ticket really is, and be aware of the risks in transactions that aren't online or verified. Attorney General Weiser urges the public to be, quote, smart event-goers by making sure the tickets you're buying are authentic and you know the full cost of any ticket you're purchasing. For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
For today's weather, in Boulder, it's sunny with a high of 80. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 59. In Denver, a high of 99. Tonight, a low of 64 with partly cloudy skies. In Fort Collins, it's sunny with a high of 88 and wind gusts as high as 22 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 59 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Kira Zizzo.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Shannon Young. The 5th Annual Environment, Nature, Outdoors Film Festival opens this week in Boulder. Joining me to discuss what's in store is Film Festival Director Richard Paradise. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Shannon. It's great to be back.
Well, give us an overview of what's ahead.
Okay. Well, you mentioned it's the 5th year, but I feel like it's only the 3rd year because squeezed in between those 5 years was the pandemic, of course. But we're back in full force at the Dairy Arts Center, July 13th through the 16th. And the festival is bookended by two big programs. We have our opening night reception and film. That comes Thursday evening at the Dairy and the Hilton Garden Inn. We do our reception first, and then we all sort of walk over, because it's only a block and a half away, to the Dairy Arts Center. And that film might sort of provide some controversy initially starting out the festival. It's called Nuclear Now. It's by Oliver Stone, and his whole premise is, why aren't we looking at nuclear energy as a clean energy source to hope mitigate climate change? And many people probably don't realize that 22% of our electricity generated is generated through nuclear power still to this day. But there's a lot of controversy surrounding it, and his film makes a very compelling argument to take a relook at this. And then ending the festival, we've got a great program. We've got this wonderful film called Patrick and the Whale. And actually, Patrick Dystra is going to actually join us. And it's about his exploration of whale life. He befriends a huge sperm whale, a female sperm whale, and he's able to communicate and swim with this whale in her pod, which is quite unusual. But more importantly, we're also going to be honoring James Balog, noted nationally known photographer, climate scientist. He was involved with the film Chasing Ice, which was very prominent about 5 or 6 years ago. And so we're going to be honoring him with an award, a kind of our Earth Angel Award, for his work on behalf of the environmental movement and crisis, climate crisis change. So those two events bookend the festival, but there's a lot of great films in between, all taking place at the Dairy Arts Center, at the Bodecker, smaller cinema, more intimate, and the larger Gordon Gamm Theater.
So let's go back to opening night.
Sure.
And the first of those bookends,
yes.
the film Nuclear Now, which, as you hinted, is could be rather controversial, and I would, yes, say it could be even more controversial here in Boulder, which is home to people who have been involved in the anti-nuclear movement for, mm-hmm, many decades. Mm-hmm. Now, there is a renewed look at nuclear as a potential way to provide power sources. But there, those concerns remain, or people who have been concerned for many decades still continue to be concerned. Have there been any efforts to bring them in to also have this discussion to really hit on the nuances?
Right. Well, we do have a speaker afterwards, Mark Jensen, who is the chairperson of the Department of Nuclear Energy and Engineering at Colorado Mines, the University of Colorado Mines. And he's going to be on hand to answer any questions that I can't answer. I mean, I'm not a technical individual. I'm not a nuclear scientist. But we welcome discussion and dialogue from the audience. So I hope people will come, watch the movie, and decide on their own part. And I've shown this movie before in other places. And I would say that in 95% of the audience comes away from the movie with a more open sort of viewpoint of looking at nuclear today. Nuclear from the 60s and 70s is a lot different from what nuclear is today. They have lots of new technologies. There are new things being developed in terms of nuclear waste disposal. They're working on that at Colorado Mines, for instance, using chemicals. So I don't want to get into the weeds about the movie, but I would encourage people, even if you're anti-nuclear or you're not so sure, I would encourage you to come see the film and give it a chance. Now, you can go to the event as, you know, the full-blown event, which is the party before and then the movie, or you can just buy a ticket to the movie. That is an option also. And I welcome discourse, you know, after the film.
Another film that's going to be showing also has a local connection. It's Youth v. Gov. And you're going to have a presenter afterwards tell us about that movie.
Yes. Well, Youth versus the Government is a landmark suit against the U.S. government by, I think, 18 individuals, 18 young people, though this suit has been going on for about 6 years now, and it's just been sort of restarted because after 3 years of being in limbo, waiting for a judge to make a decision on whether it could go forward, that judge, federal judge, decided that yes, it can continue and to move through the court and actually be, you know, sort of prosecuted. And it's a civil lawsuit against the United States government. And we're going to have one of the individuals, Nick, N-I-C, Veneer, be joining us. And also James Balog, who I mentioned is going to be our award recipient closing night. He was the executive producer on the film. So I'm expecting him also to be there for the Q&A afterwards. And it's an interesting case because they all were about teenagers. And now they're kind of young adults in their 20s, young 20s. And so it should be a very interesting film. It obviously makes the point that the U.S. government has not done enough to alleviate climate change, climate crisis, and that their future is at risk because of it. And so, you know, we'll see what happens with the case. But we have movies that deal with outdoor recreation, rock climbing, bicycling from the standpoint of road racing. We have a short program. We have a great film about climbers who climbed Mount Kilimanjaro and did it with one kidney because they were living donors of their kidney. So there's a lot of film involved in this festival, a lot of diversity involved. And I hope people will seek out the program on our website, BoulderENOFF.org, BoulderENOFF.org. Take a look at the full program. We also, Dairy Art Center, which is selling the tickets for the festival. You can find the program there on their website.
And you can also watch some of the trailers for some of these films.
Oh, yeah. All the trailers are there on our website and their website. We have pretty much speakers for every movie afterwards. Again, I know we're limited in time, but I don't want to go through all the films. But, you know, we have this great film about wildlife and animal rescue, which is also another Colorado connection, the Wild Animal Sanctuary, which is based in Colorado. They're one of our sponsors of the festival, but they will also be speaking after a film about wildlife. We have another sponsor, Pellegrin Energy, which is involved with the Valmont coal plant and repurposing that plant. So that's another, again, Boulder connection, Boulder. So yeah, there's a lot there in those 4 days.
We're going to just have to leave it there. Yep. The festival, the Boulder Environmental Nature Outdoors Film Festival, opens tomorrow and wraps up on the 16th.
On Sunday, yes.
Yes, Richard Paradise, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you, Shannon. It's always great to be back in your studio.
Okay, we now turn to a story from the Four Corners region. Tribal attorneys across the nation are concerned about a recent Supreme Court ruling on Navajo Nation water rights. As Clark Adamitis of KSUT and KSJD reports for Rocky Mountain Community Radio, an attorney for the Ute Mountain Ute tribe says it calls into question the trustee relationship between tribes and the federal government.
In his opening argument before the Supreme Court in March, attorney Shay Dvoretsky argued about a treaty agreement ratified over a century ago.
In the 1868 treaty, the United States promised the Navajos a permanent homeland. Both parties understood that in promising the Navajos their land, the United States was also promising them the water it needed to sustain life in the arid Southwest. Those treaties are specific sources of law that give the nation rights to water and impose duties on the government to secure that water.
Dvoretsky was representing the Navajo Nation in its case against the state of Arizona. He reminded the Supreme Court that the U.S. has treaty obligations to the Navajo Nation. He also emphasized that the federal government has played a role of trustee when it comes to Navajo water rights. The federal government has spoken for the tribe in water rights cases and prevented the Navajo from intervening in cases on their own behalf. For those reasons, Dvoretsky argued that the U.S. has a legal obligation to protect and secure water for the tribe.
The United States thinks that it alone decides whether it has made good on its promises, but that's not how promises work. A promise is a solemn duty, and the United States' duty is to see that the nation has the water it needs and the United States promised.
But in a 5-4 ruling, the court disagreed. Writing for the majority, Justice Brett Kavanaugh said the Navajo Treaty of 1868 contains no language that says the U.S. must secure water for the tribe.
Worst part is the total and complete ignorance that the Supreme Court has about the nation's relationship with tribes.
Peter Ortego is general counsel for the Ute Mountain Ute tribe. He says that the right to water is implied in the 1868 treaty, even if it's not explicitly mentioned.
If the Navajo had claimed that the trust responsibility included, I don't know, say air to breathe, is the United States not under responsibility to make sure that the Navajo have air to breathe? Because I don't recall the treaty saying specifically that they would provide them air.
Through historic treaty agreements, tribal nations gave up some sovereign autonomy in exchange for protections from the U.S. These include financial assistance and relief-like federal support for tribes during the COVID-19 pandemic. Ortego says the recent ruling against the Navajo Nation creates a legal gray area, and that it's now less clear what the U.S. must provide to tribes as trustee.
A lot of branches of the United States will probably struggle in future administrations to provide the level of trust responsibility they would like to, but because of this ruling, they'll very easily be able to be taken away from services that they would ordinarily provide.
If federal courts continue to weaken the legal responsibilities of the U.S. as a trustee to tribes, tribal attorneys like Peter Ortego will have to be more assertive. In his dissenting opinion for the minority, Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch said as much. He wrote, quote, "It is hard to see how this court, or any court, could ever again fairly deny a request from the Navajo to intervene in litigation over the Colorado River," unquote. For KSUT and KSJD, I'm Clark Adamitis.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas on how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Just a few years after Roe v. Wade established a woman's right to choose abortion, the Hyde Amendment was passed on September 30, 1976 by the House of Representatives with a 312-93 vote. if the pro-life faction couldn't prohibit abortion, they could at least prevent the federal government from financing it. This principle has had a big effect on federal abortion policy ever since. Once the Supreme Court overthrew Roe v. Wade last year, several states either banned or greatly restricted a woman's right to choose to have an abortion. Many of those states have large military bases, so the military decided they would see to it that active-duty military stationed in no-abortion states could still get abortions, including financing travel costs for women who would need to travel out of state for the procedure. The memorandum states that, quote, service members and their families should have time to make private health care decisions, establish additional privacy protections for reproductive health care information, develop a program to reimburse applicable fees, develop a program to support Department of Defense health care providers who are subject to adverse action, including civil or criminal penalties or loss of license or reprimand, establish travel and transportation allowances for service members and their dependents as appropriate and consistent with applicable federal law and operational requirements, and facilitate official travel to access non-covered reproductive health care that is unavailable within the local area of a service member's permanent duty station, close quote. Senator Tuberville objects to the new defense policy in which the Defense Department will pay for travel for a service member to get an elective abortion if there's not one available where they are based. And Tuberville says he will single-handedly halt any military promotions until the policy is rescinded. Now there's also Senate Bill 822, a bill to ban the funding of travel expenses for our military. Modification to Department of Defense Travel Authorities for Abortion-Related Expenses Act of 2023 is, quote, a bill to terminate the Department of Defense memorandum relating to access to abortions, to prohibit the use of travel and transportation allowances, medical convalescent leave, and administrative absences to travel to obtain abortions and for other purposes, close quote. Now we're seeing the first time in more than a century that the Marines have had no acting commander. That leadership vacuum, not being able to make strategic decisions at a time when we're facing the war in Ukraine, preparing for any conflict with China, not being able to make long-term planning decisions, that's already affecting our military preparedness. Senator Tuberville denies military preparedness as being affected by the inability of the Department of Defense to put people into decision-making positions or to give them raises. If you have thoughts on Senate Bill 822, you can contact your senators. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars with a few ideas on staying cool when the weather is hot. Yes, we've been very blessed with a cold summer thus far, but you know, things can change. So what can you do? Well, you can drink a lot of water, and if you add lemon to the water, lemon is actually a refrigerant. You might also want to use some cold water infusion of teas that are also considered refrigerant. Consider lemon balm, peppermint, hibiscus. You have also seen things like cucumbers and berries put in the water. Berries are cooling. What a wonderful thing. So, I also love peppermint. Peppermint is cooling. You know this when you put a mint in your mouth, it has this cool thing, this hot thing, then cool. So what if you put maybe 10 to 20 drops in a spray bottle, let's say a 4-ounce spray bottle, and then fill it with water with your 20 drops of peppermint. And then when you're feeling so hot, you close your eyes and your mouth, take off your glasses if you wear them, and mist your head, your face, your chest. It's immediate cool down. You can also take tepid baths, meaning, you know, body temperature, and add 7 drops of peppermint oil to the bath. Of course, when the weather's hot, we want to wear cooling clothing. And, you know, the color can also affect us. Red is a warming color, and black is warming. So, of course, summer is a great time for your pastels, your cool colors. Blue is cooling, turquoise. Have fun with that. And of course, this is the time when we want to make use of cooling summer foods. Summer is the time for salads and fruit and melon, because if you don't eat melon now, you're going to regret it in a few months when they're just not as good anymore. So eat more cooling. Now, it is interesting that cayenne pepper is considered a warming food, but it can also cool you down. You probably noticed that in a lot of climates, they make food very spicy because the cayenne pepper will make you sweat, and that will help to relieve trapped body heat, which ultimately will cool you down. But, you know, a little cayenne might make you feel warmer a lot, might help you to sweat. I know, cayenne is just a paradox. And they have all these cool little fans, battery operated. Of course, I have just an old-fashioned fan. Put a few drops of peppermint oil on that and fan yourself. It's so easy. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
Thank you for joining us on today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Thanks to Kira Zizzo, Ryan Bigham, Jackie Sedley, Poor Jai Junkit, Jack Armstrong, Alexis Kenyon. And stay tuned for a live in-studio radio theater production with Destination Freedom Black Radio Days. The presentation is called The Difference. They will be live in just 5 minutes.